I adored your mother. I had a great deal of trouble with your dad, but I think you did too.
In this book, if I succeed, you won't like my dad early in the book. But if I succeed with what I intended to do, toward later on, there's slowly his evolution. He becomes a very compassionate man at the end of his life, and a very sweet man. But it wasn't always that way. So of course I had trouble with that. It was hard go. But for, you know, somehow I intuitively knew, even as a young growing boy, that this was a pretty spectacular man that I was lucky enough to have for a father.
And ironically, you end up leading the life that he would have, if he could have chosen, and he couldn't.
Yeah.
Choose a life for himself.
Or he didn't. My father's a better singer than I. I mean, truly. He was not a writer. My mother would have been the writer. My mother was the storyteller between those two. My father was a singer, a beautiful singer, had a lovely voice, and he knew a lot of songs. But for some, I think a lack of education and the Great Depression really did imprint him with this notion that he had to hold some kind of job, that he couldn't just throw it all away and go off and seek fame and fortune, you know, behind that voice of his. You know, oddly enough, it was my editor who read the manuscript that I first gave him, and he said, you know, what I like about this book is that it's not about your career, but don't you realize that you have the career that your father wanted? And I said, and I had not thought about it, hand over my heart. And it was my editor, Gary Fiskett, John, who said, you know, you need to really frame that. You don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but you have to frame this. Because later on, my father mentions Emmylou Harris on his deathbed. So I needed to frame for the reader why he would know that, why he would make reference to Emmylou as a friend of mine. And so that was when I started to consider, wow, I really did. I had the career that he always wanted for himself. It just hadn't occurred to me.
His deathbed turns out, well, he's dying, but he kind of has this, he comes back on for a curtain call.
He does. He makes a curtain call.
It was bizarre.
It was. I arrived, I'd been on tour in England, and I arrived back, and my mother said, you need to get her, and I got there, and by the time I made it down to Baytown, this little hospital east of Houston, he's on life support, and his legs have turned blue, and the doctor says he's done, you know. And I guess somehow he sensed that I was there or something, and because I went over to him and I said, "Hey, Dad," I said, "I love you, you know. Go on wherever you gotta go, you know. It's gonna be okay. I love you. I really love you." Well, I guess with that was all he needed, because the next thing you know, the buzzer's going off on the life, you know, support system, and he's coming back. He does make a curtain call. He comes back, and we spent 4 days. You know, the doctor just said, look, let's take all of this stuff off, and, you know, let's take the life support off, and we'll give you a private room, and you can... I was kind of become a minor celebrity at the time, so the hospital was happy to have me there, and they gave us a private room and said, the nursing staff will be here if you need them. So we spent 4 days kind of having a goodbye party for him. It was a great curtain call that he made. He came back, you know, and his death scene is really very beautiful experience, moving experience. I've been lucky enough to be present for birth of my four children and literally present for the deaths of my mother and father. Literally in the same, you know, in the bed with them. And, you know, both experiences are equally beautiful to me.
Near the end of the book, you take her to a Roy Acuff concert where your parents had, you know, your parents had met at one. Because now you know these people, you're backstage.
He had a dressing room backstage at the Grand Ole Opry, and I was performing there. So I took her in to meet him, and she told him the story about how she met the love of her life at his concert at the Buchanan High School Gymnasium in Western Tennessee. And Roy Acuff, being the consummate professional showman, he let on like, oh, I remember that. And he basically let on like, oh, I remember the light of love shining off of those two people. You know, he just camped it up, you know. And she just floated out of there. It was he played to her beautifully. It's like, I will love Roy Acuff forever because he just played to that girl. She was 18 again when we came out of there, and she was so happy. She was just floating. And on the, and this is when I got the idea to write the book, actually, because she said, oh, he was just like I always knew he would be. And so she said, didn't his hair remind you of your daddy's? And I said, ah, that's my last line of the book.
The book is Chinaberry Sidewalks, a memoir. I've been speaking with the author, Rodney Crowell, and Chinaberry Sidewalks is published by Knopf.